pushing a time clock and working 9 to 5. We're talking about working around the clock, rain or shine, hot or cold, because crops and animals won't wait. Jimmy knows all about it because he lives it. And Jimmy knows what you're going through because he goes through it too. He's here to talk about it. It's seed and feed, chemicals and compost, vaccinations and irrigation. It's time for Today in Ag with Jimmy Clark.
Hey, good day to all you great stewards of the land. It's Today in Ag with Jimmy Clark on 96.5 KUCO. Happy Veterans Day to all you veterans out there. Right now it's 61 degrees, 36 on the dew point, 39 on the humidity. The winds are out of the north, northwest, 6 miles an hour and gusting up to 10, and I'll have your Long Ranger provided by the Hobart Farm and Garden coming up later on this hour. We got a great day on the show today. Senator Casey Murdoch will be on here with me on my second and third segments. But meanwhile, I wrote this up a little bit for you guys today. Today is a very special day. It's Veterans Day. It's a day to honor the men and women who bravely served and are still serving our country. There isn't enough words in the English language to express my respect, gratitude, support, and admiration for the individuals who protect and preserve our Constitution. I'm sorry, I get pretty emotional when I talk about veterans, but happy Veterans Day, everybody. And they had a deal going on out there at Sweetwater today. They got the highway named out there, Sweetwater Veteran Memorial. And so today when you see a veteran, tell him thank you. There's a lot of farmers and ranchers that are veteran and always will be. And they advocate the feeding of the world's hungry, including the ones in war zone that are on the brink of starvation. So God bless you guys. When we get back, I'm going to have Senator Casey Murdoch on the show with me today. So let me gather myself, and we'll be right back. It's Today in Ag with Jimmy Clark on 96.5 KCO.
Great news, folks. Ron Hayes here to let you know SEI Agritech in Elk City is now your livestock nutrition center dealer. This is better quality feed and minerals for your cattle, horses, sheep, and goats. Plus, at SEI Agritech, you can buy everything from bulk to 50-pound bags. Call or go see SEI Agritech today about your feed and mineral needs. Their number, 580-225-0317. 580-225-0317. Better feed, better results.
Docility is probably the biggest selling point for Red Angus. Red Angus cattle are just more docile as a breed, just bred into them. It's been that way for years since the inception of the breed. With two kids, and not just the kids, the older generation, they don't want to mess with bulls that are not gentle. Red Angus are more gentle to handle. We raise registered Red Angus, Benji White, B&L Red Angus. BLRedAngus.com on Facebook. Follow us at B&L Red Angus.
We've been part of Western Oklahoma's ag industry since statehood. I'm Marty Maddox from Great Plains Bank in Elk City. We proudly support our local FFA labor auctions and premium sales. Our local lenders have a combined 127 years of banking experience. We handle all ag-related loans, like land purchases, farm operating loans, and stocker lines of credit. And we recently helped over 700 area farmers and ranchers with their PPP loans. Great Plains Bank in Elk City is here to lend agriculture a helping hand. Member FDIC.
Jimmy's all wound up and ready to go. Here comes more of Today in Ag with Jimmy Clark on 96.5 KECO.
Hello, I'm back. Sorry about that. I was on the phone. And right now, the temperature is still 61 degrees. And on the phone with me right now is the Senator Casey Murdoch. He is District 27 now, right? That's District 27. Yeah. And some of the things have changed around a little bit. You got Roger Mills County now.
I do. They in redistricting where I've gained Roger Mills County.
Good. Well, welcome to our area.
Well, I'm tickled. You know, when the redistricting was going to happen, and, you know, rural Oklahoma is losing population, I knew my district was going to grow, but I wanted to try to keep my district as rural as I could get it and keep it. And Roger Mills County is, they're no different than the people in Dewey County or Cimarron County. We're all just trying to make a living ranching and farming.
Well, you're from Felt, Oklahoma.
Yep.
And there's a, that's in Cimarron County. Just to let everybody know where you're from.
Yep, all the way at the end of the panhandle.
Yeah, out there in God's country. So there's some, I don't know exactly right there where you're at, but I do love pheasant hunting up there in the panhandle. So there is one good thing up there, I know for sure, besides a bunch of good people.
Yeah, well, antelope hunting, and I like to shoot prairie dogs. That's fun.
Oh yeah, it's fun. Well, I was reading, I did my homework, and when you accepted my invitation to be on the show, we're agriculture show, and we talk about what things are happening in our ag area and what affects us. And there's a lot of things that happen outside in the world, whether it be in Oklahoma City or Washington or overseas, what's going on with foreign stuff. But I've touched on this a few times in the last month or so, but the African swine disease, that's scary. I don't care what people think. That's a scary thing.
It is. And, you know, a few years ago, this hit China. They lost 50% of their swine population.
Right. And just not here recently, down in Dominican Republic and Haiti, I think they lost it all.
Yeah. So, and you get into the federal issues and kind of how the administration is not protecting our southern border. What, we have 50 or 60,000 Haitians coming up through Mexico into the United States.
Yes.
That's scary. And they could be carrying it unknowingly on their clothes, on their shoes. And if it gets into the feral swine population there in Texas, that scares me because it's game over. I don't know how, I mean, hell, we can control feral swines right now.
Right, yeah, that's a major problem in a lot of states, especially Texas and Oklahoma. And I'm glad to see that our Oklahoma Agriculture Department is actually taking steps forward to help rid of them. I don't know if we can ever get rid of them, but we can definitely get it down, help control it anyway. Because I was talking with a gentleman the other day. And he was saying that the Department of Agriculture has informed probably you guys in the Senate and the House, but also the governor, it's not a matter of how, it's just when that it's going to hit Oklahoma.
Yeah, it's when.
Yeah.
And, you know, we had a meeting with them a couple months ago. It'll cost the state, just the Department of Agriculture, $20 million just to handle the situation. It's going to cost our industry billions of dollars.
Oh, yeah, because there's a lot of hog farms in Oklahoma.
There are. But it's not just the pigs. When it comes to America, when it hits the United States, the first thing that will happen is they will put a stop movement order on all livestock. That's not just pigs. That's cattle. That's your barrel racer going down the road. They're not going to be able to move their horses for 72 hours. No livestock transportation for 72 hours.
Yeah.
What is that going to do to our supply chain as far as beef,
as far as, well, of course, the pork production.
Yeah, poultry. And lamb, sheep, goats. I mean, the list is endless. And, you know, you hit the nail on the head about the unauthorized entry on our border to the south, which is, you know, the thing's been a joke for at least the whole thing's a joke down there. I used to work down there just within a mile or two of the river down there. And, you know, and this was back in 15 and 16, and they were having their best or their worst entry then, and it's 10 times worse now than it was then. And I'm sure we're undermanned down there, and what do you do with all these people and this whole nine yards? But like you said, they could be carrying it and not know it, and they sneak into the country and they go work at some farm or somewhere where they do have pork, and it gets there, and then people, the farmer there doesn't know that his animals got it, and he moves his over to a bigger farm, and then it's just, it's catastrophic. It's like a domino effect.
Yeah, and this fever, this disease will live in the ground for months.
Right.
It can be frozen. And for like 9 months at 30 below zero, and it will still live.
Dang. It's crazy. I know it's crazy, and I've read articles where they have come up with a successful vaccine that worked for the one that's in Europe and Africa. That that fever, that disease that's got, you know, there's more than one out there, but the main one is that one. And here's where I kind of get irked about the whole deal, but it works, it's been successful, but to be approved, it has to be tested for a few years, 2 years minimum, unlike our, not to get touchy, but the COVID-19 vaccine, you know what I mean there? And it's, yeah, and it's already working, so, you know, but I guess they have to test to see what goes into the product and make sure it's not going to affect humans down the road and stuff like that, and I understand that, but if we do get this African swine fever in the United States, I mean, it's like you said, it's going to be catastrophic.
Yeah, it's scary.
Well, not to change the subject, but today's Veterans Day, and happy Veterans Day to all veterans. And you were just recently at Sweetwater, weren't you?
No, I wasn't.
Oh, so I had somebody text me and said you were out there. So that, they must have had you. There must have been another senator out there. So sorry about that. They had, they dedicated the Highway 30 going there through Sweetwater. They dedicated part of that to be called the Sweetwater Veterans Memorial Highway.
Yeah, I think Senator Yeck went there.
Yes.
Him and I talked about it. He asked if I was going, but I've got callus to Prague in the morning, so I'm headed home.
Well, that's what we like to hear on this, our radio show, is people actually doing stuff out in the field. And you have are you strictly ranch up there, or do you have farming operation up there?
I strictly run cows, cow-calf operation. My brother's farm. I farmed quite a little bit, and I didn't have time to do it all, and I let my brothers take over my farming.
Probably, but you love your cattle though, right?
Yeah.
Well, speaking of cattle, if you guys are just joining us on Today in Ag, I have Senator Casey Murdoch with me. He's District 27 of Oklahoma State Senate, and they just recently redistricted a lot of the area, and Roger Mills, which is part of our listening area, and also Ellis and Dewey and parts of Custer. He is now the senator for those counties, and I have him on the show and appreciate him being on here today. But you guys earlier this year had the Oklahoma Beef Day, and last year during the pandemic, they shut the one down in Denver, and you guys had it. We had it here in Oklahoma at Oklahoma City. How did that go? It went well from what I heard, but I want to hear it from you because I know you were involved in this.
It was a total success. They are bringing it back. The Breed Association voted this spring, toward the end of session, to make Oklahoma City Cattlemen's Congress the official breed show for their breed.
Senator, you got your radio on? I'm getting some feedback.
No, actually, I was getting it earlier, but I shut my radio off. I just have you on speaker.
Okay, cool. Very good. Yeah, it's gone now. Thank you.
Okay. But so they had voted, but we're also getting some more breeds that didn't go to Denver. The Brandis Association is going to be going to Oklahoma City. I believe there's like 13 different breed associations that are coming to Oklahoma City, so that's exciting.
Oh, yeah, it's very exciting because Oklahoma, you know, we're in a top 10 cattle in the United States, and, you know, most of the cattle are right here in Texas, Oklahoma, Kansas, Nebraska, and the Dakotas, and if we can get cattle to Oklahoma the way you guys did that last year from Denver, that was awesome.
Well, you know, probably I think one thing that helped us is Oklahoma supports agriculture. We support the cattle industry and our at the Capitol, the people, but Colorado is running a ballot initiative that will kill the livestock industry. I don't know where it's at right now as far as the process where they got the signatures, but it would basically outlaw AI in cattle. You could not harvest an animal over 5 years old or under 5 years old. And it would just kill the cattle market and the dairy market.
Yeah, that there's a lot of crazy things going on in Colorado, and I got a lot of good friends up there, but they you know, Colorado is kind of a funny state. You know, there's a lot of big farms and ranches up there, but closer to Denver and those other places, they get a little funny on their laws. You know, they don't like the oil field anymore, but, you know, there's a lot of major oil field companies headquartered there. And then the same thing with the cattle. Maybe not so much on the farming side, but on the cattle, Colorado is a big cattle state, and they come up with some crazy stuff from time to time up there here lately.
Yeah, they have, and well, you know, it's that Front Range. It's, I think you've got a lot of people from California moved to Colorado, to the mountains, and it changed their politics. Here a few years ago, they were a strong red state, and today they're blue, and they've changed their politics. I've got a friend I went to college with, has a little starter yard around Longmont, Colorado, and they started building homes around him, and he still has it, but I expect that they will try to shut him down before long, just because, you know, little starter yards, they smell, it's not the most prettiest thing to look at, and you get these city people that they may not like the smell.
Right.
It was there when they moved there.
Kind of like Yellowstone on TV. So,
yeah.
There's except the different reason casinos, but our other stuff. But, well, speaking of cattle, you wanted to ask you your opinion on, you know, there's a lot of stuff going on with the cattle producers, the feedlots, the packers, the price of beef. And do you have an opinion on your thoughts on that right there? Because right now, you know, yesterday I noticed four senators, Democrat and Republican, in the United States Senate come to a compromise yesterday and talking about, you know, how they're going to adjust the free market a little better to help out the ranchers and the farmers that own cattle. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Well, I'm glad they're doing it. You know, it's
the argument for cool country of origin labeling has been going on for several years.
Right.
Probably what started this was JBS. You know, JBS is a Brazilian-owned company, and I'm all in favor of country of origin labeling. I mean, we raise the best beef in the world right here in the United States, right here where we live.
We do.
It's the safest. It is the best that you can buy. And I've worked in feed yards all my life. We have a process when we raising them all the way through quality control. We have I'm trying to think of the word. I just went blank. Sorry.
I do it all the time. Don't worry.
You know, when you doctor an animal in the feed yard, you have a certain amount of time that you cannot harvest that animal until that medicine's out of the system.
That's correct.
Withdrawal time. That's what I was looking for. So you have a withdrawal period that you can't harvest. We have, you know, it's very, very safe. It's very, very clean. And this beef that is coming from other countries that they're putting into our market, can they say the same thing? One thing that worries me, and I talked a few years ago on this, is when I believe it was Obama, that it was during when the Olympics was in Brazil, he made a deal with Brazil that they could ship in processed meat. And that concerned me because, well, you know, the JBS brothers got in trouble here a few years ago for bribing inspectors.
Yep.
Can they bribe some inspectors and get meat shipped into the United States that's tainted? And then what if we find out it's tainted once it gets into our supply? What would that do to the markets? I mean, you'd have recalls, you'd have the board crash, and it would affect all of us. I think, you know, the easiest fix to that, if you're letting it come in, label it as Brazilian beef or Australian beef, but let the American consumer decide whether they want to buy American beef or whether they want to buy Brazilian beef.
That's spot on because, you know, and I understand talking to some people that are in the beef industry and are travel all over the United States and are very involved in what's going on and with the beef deal. And I understand that we have to have some trim beef come into the United States to mix with our beef. And I understand that. But like you said on the cool deal, it needs to be labeled where it came from. And, you know, our exports of beef from the United States going outward is at an all-time high, which is good for the cattle market, for the demand. But do we necessarily have to have all those coming back in? No, probably not. I'm not the guy to ask, but that's just my personal thoughts on it. But that the cool deal, that labeling is very highly important, like you said.
It is. And you know, the fight between the feed yard guys and the cow calf guys and the packers have been going on my entire life. I traded cattle right out of college. I'd go to sale barns and trade calves, and you know, I hit all the sale barns and sitting there. You know, this was 30 years ago, and you heard guys sitting there cussing the packers. Those dang packers are screwing us. It's been going on forever. We need them. I want a place to sell my animals, and I have to say, I'm, you know, during the pandemic when the packers were making $800, $900, $1,200 a head, and the feed yards was losing money. You know, that just didn't seem right. But I don't know what the fix is, because what scares me worse than the packers is that the federal government will get in and start messing with how we price things. And you look at what they do with wheat, what they do with corn. They start giving, you know, putting rules on there, and it's just in my experience, the federal government can screw things up a lot more than they can fix it.
Yeah.
And it worries me. But I don't know what the fix is. And as far as the cool deal, that needs to be the federal government, because if Oklahoma, and I've been asked to run a country of origin bill in the state of Oklahoma, that everything in Oklahoma be labeled
with country of origin deal, a label. What concerns me with that is, what's that going to make the price of beef in Oklahoma for Oklahoma consumers? You know, we just fixed our beer a couple years ago, and there forever, Oklahoma was 3-2 beer, and, you know, in Texas it was, I think, 6-point, and there was only two states in the union that had 3-2 beer, and we were one of them.
And our neighbors to the north was the other.
You know, to be consistent with the entire United States and for the manufacturing process, you know, every state kind of needs to be the same. So I truly believe that the country of origin labeling needs to be a federal deal, so that all the competition in the states is the same.
Right, and you're correct. Senator Casey Murdoch is on the show with me today, and we're talking beef, swine, and we got a couple more things to talk back after this break. So, Senator, if you'd be so kind to hang on with me, I'm going to go to break. You're listening to Today in Ag with Jimmy Clark on 96.5 KECO.
This is the Western Oklahoma Livestock Auction Market Report for Monday, November 8th. 1,259 head were sold. 3 head of steers at 328 brought 216. 9 at 549 brought 152.50. 18 at 643 brought 151. 21 at 685 brought 161.50. 20 at 773 brought 153.60. 3 head of heifers at 348 brought 160. 17 at 480 brought 140. 5 at 581 brought 124. 10 at 760 brought 144. 13 at 865 brought 141.50. Butcher cows were 5 to 70. Bred cows 200 to 10.50. 50 butcher bulls brought 72.50 to 89. Western Oklahoma Livestock Auction, I-40 exit 71 in Clinton, Oklahoma. Sale every Monday at 10 a.m. to consign. Call Brandon Hickey at 580-497-6095.
Is your cattle mineral investment being washed away? Weather can cause conventional mineral to absorb water and blow away. Simply put, your cows probably aren't eating it. That's why Purina created Wind and Rain Storm Mineral, a weatherized mineral that can stand up to the elements. Its larger particle size makes it harder to blow away and easier for water to pass through it. Keep money in your pocket. Contact Farmers Union Co-op of Elk City today.
He loves talking about farming and ranching. Here's more of Today in Ag with Jimmy Clark on 96.5 KECO.
All right, welcome back. On today with me is Senator Casey Murdoch, and he is state senator for District 27, which includes a big part of our listening area here at KCO. And thank you again so much for taking your time. I know you're a busy man. Matter of fact, I know you're busy if you're going to be preg checking tomorrow. You're getting ready for that. So thanks again, sir, for being on today.
No problem.
Well, I was thinking about something when you was talking about some people want you to introduce a bill of in Oklahoma for putting a label of country of origin where that beef comes from. In Oklahoma, we have USDA meat inspectors and we have State of Oklahoma Agriculture Department meat inspectors. Two different deals, but they do the same thing, and different laws for different types of meat or how it's processed, and I don't want to go into that. What I want to ask you a question. You got any pull in Washington at all?
a little bit.
Well, you being a farmer and rancher in Oklahoma in Cimarron County, me being one here in Beckham and Greer County, you and I both utilize the United States Department of Agriculture, the FSA office, the NRCS, you know, these reports that I read on my show every day, these emails everybody gets from, comes from the USDA. And President Biden has this deal working where everybody under the executive branch is going to have to, you know, I think it's kind of on hold right now, not 100% sure, but the mandate on the vaccination. And I got a problem with that because these, and this is me talking personally here, and I want to hear your thoughts on it if you don't mind giving them to me. But, you know, our FSA people and NRCS people that I deal with directly all the time with, They've been mandated to get their vaccination. It was already supposed to have been done, and it's been kind of quiet, and I think everything's kind of a little bit on hold. And President Biden's got the deal going with OSHA, with the private side of the companies that have 100 or more employees on there. But these guys made it all through the pandemic with helping us keep our farming going, because I depend on them a lot. I depend a lot on the NRCS for my any programs I got going on, FSA for my livestock protection program, my wheat and my cotton and my alfalfa stuff, you know, blah, 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 et cetera, et cetera. And these guys are very important to me. But, you know, when you come out with a mandate, and this ain't about whether you should get the vaccine or shouldn't get it. That's your personal choice, as far as I'm concerned. But what are your thoughts on these mandates?
I don't like them. I don't like my. I think it is unconstitutional. I think it's an infringement on your rights. I mean, I can go down a list of, you know, we've got HIPAA laws. Can they actually ask you if you've been vaccinated? I think that is against the HIPAA laws. But I think across the board, not just FSA offices and USDA workers, it's our whole economy. We've got a supply shortage. There's no one more independent than truckers in the United States. There's not any other industries that got more independent thinking people than truck drivers. They start mandating for truck drivers, we're not going to have our products shipped out. Back to the USDA, I was visiting with, well, I had a one of the state trappers called me, and he was being mandated. He goes, I'm not going to take it. He goes, I've been in 30 years. He goes, I'm just going to retire. But, you know, can you do anything? Well, you know, this is a federal mandate. I don't, you know, all my pull in Washington left when Trump got beat. I was on Trump's Ag Advisory Committee, and, you know, I had a little pull then, but with Biden in there, I don't have near as much. But, those USDA employees are, you know, they're just like you and I. They're country people, they're ag people, and, you know, they're pretty independent. What happens when they say, no, we're not going to do this, we'll take early retirement, or, you know, we'll just go find another job? Your meat inspectors. It's going to shut down these plants. We're not going to have protein in our grocery stores if they can't be inspected. I mean, you want to talk about a supply chain interruption in our food supply. That will cause that.
It'll be worse than the virus itself when it hits.
It will. Yeah.
Yeah, because these guys have been here the whole time with us without any mandates, and they've been doing a great job, even though, and I'm just talking about, I know you got your meat inspectors, you got forestry department people, you got people that are down at these ports inspecting loads coming in and loads coming out, talking about those truck drivers, you know, that stuff has to be approved. Food products have to be approved before they get on those trucks. You know, you start, if you lose, just say you lose half of your force, you think it's slow now? Wait till that happens.
Right. And that's what worries me. And you know, and I guess the thing that just really makes me mad is we are threatening our economy and our way of life and people's livelihoods on a virus that you have a 99% chance of surviving.
And I survived it, so I agree with you. And there's a lot of people out there I know that has lost somebody to this virus. But this is not about it's not about that. It's about forcing people to do stuff that shouldn't be forced to do it. It's not about, you know, and I'm trying to make sure everybody's clear on that. I'm not against the vaccine,
right,
or nothing.
It is personal choice. It's your personal choice. And
you know, this is the United States of America. We're supposed to be free to make our own decisions, and we've lost a lot of freedom. We've lost a lot of freedom in the last year. If you want to talk about quality of life, I hate masks. My quality of life goes way down if I have to fly and wear a dang mask the whole time.
Right.
It's miserable. This whole thing has I think, we've lost a lot of freedoms over.
Yeah, we have. And I just, brought that up. If you got any say so, or to somebody in Washington that you can give them an earful, let them know that, you know, we got our people's back out here, and it's choice. It's not mandate or woman date, as some people are saying now, mandate or woman date. But anyway, because these people, if you go to, I don't know about your FSA office, but you walk into that one at Sayre, for example, or the one down in Greer County, you know, it looks like you're driving up to a bank teller window now with all the glass up and the hand sanitizer, and you got to wear the mask and only one person in there at a time. You know, they've lost their quality of life working there, in a way. And so,
I haven't walked into mine in so long. I meet them in the hallway. They have a little table in the hallway that I sit down, and they come out of their office and meet me right there in the hallway.
Yeah.
I hadn't even been in their office.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I haven't either. That's what I mean. The one over here, for example, you walk into the door that you always walked into, but now it's partitioned off with windows and got this little breathing screen where you could talk to them. They might be able to hear you, and I'm hard hearing anyway, so they got to yell at me. So, but just the quality of life. We have to respect this virus because it is mean. But on the backside of it, it's either we're going to be living with it for the rest of our life, like the flu and stuff like that, or like I said, I'm not a medical expert or nothing, but you see what's going on around us. But when you start forcing people to do stuff, that's a whole different ballgame, because this is America, like you said.
It is, and you know, I can be for your deal and supporting you, but as soon as you put your foot on my throat and start telling me I have to, I'll go the other direction.
Yep. And I think that's happening. So you're on a lot of committees. You're on the Energy Committee, it looks like, the Transportation Committee, the Natural Resources and Regulatory Services Committee, Agriculture and Wildlife, Foreign, on the agriculture part of it. How you guys handling these foreign landowners in this marijuana business? And I'm not talking about the ones that are doing it legally and right. I'm talking about those ones that popped up out here in the country all over the Oklahoma.
Right. So, you know, that the way that the medical marijuana deal went down was, you got to remember it's state government. It's a lot like federal government, maybe a tiny bit faster, but when that passed the ballot, it went into effect 60 days later. You know, a brand new industry in the state. We were not set up as far as a regulatory agency to make sure things are being done right. So we set up the OMMA, and they were processing applicants, and you know, I think the last number I heard was around 9,000 grows in the state. And I can't remember how many dispensaries we have, but it's just the logistics of getting out and inspecting everyone and make sure they're doing right. It's just, they've been overwhelmed. So one thing we did this past year is we got OMMA a little more money, but we allowed them, gave them enough money to hire more people to go out, boots on the ground, to go and look and inspect and make sure that these grows are being done right. I'm glad you brought this up. One thing that, I think it's towards the end of session last year, I started getting a lot of phone calls, and it was on, whether it's a private or commercial applicator, the issue of drift.
Yes.
And I did an interim study this year, and it scared me. it scared me because the unknowns. I had AFR come and testify, and what they had said, you know, they're looking at, you know, farm policies. They don't know what the risk is because we don't know what the cost is. If you drift in and one of these grows, how much, what are these plants worth? What's it going to cost me as far as an insurance company or even a farmer? What's it going to cost me if I wipe out that marijuana farm?
And you know we don't, as farmer or rancher, you don't carry that much liability insurance. I mean, you do, you carry it, but what if this one grow house that's 80 acres has got $10 million worth of plants on it? You don't cover that.
Exactly. And so you have a lot of applicators that they just, if there's a grow next to it, they won't go spray your field. It's fixing to cost Oklahoma agriculture millions of dollars just in loss of production because they're not able to spray weeds or, you know, farm use practices that they've used for the last 50 years.
Right.
So I'm looking at legislation. I think just visiting with the insurance companies, they just want to know what the risk is. The other thing is it's so new. You know, if I spray next to your cotton field and kill your cotton, you have a production history. You know, we can go back and look at what you've raised the last 5 years, and we have something to go on. And, you know, okay, this is what he's raised. Okay, but we don't have that with marijuana. It's so new. There's no production history. You don't know if and I don't know anything about marijuana and how it's grown, but you don't know what this house has this hoop house has produced because it's too new. So how do you assign a value to it?
And the only person that'd be able to appraise that would be another grower, and you know what they're going to do.
Right. So I'm looking at, I've been working with a guy there in Oklahoma City that actually he's a producer of marijuana. And as far as getting a price schedule on what it's worth at what stage and try to do a schedule on in legislation so that the insurance companies will have something to go by. They will know what the risk is.
I got you. Yeah, because you hit it right on the nail head again. When, like, I had Quentin Elliott that runs the Elk City Farmers Co-op here, you know, he said the first thing they find out is where the nearest grow house is, and if it's a certain distance from where they're going to spray, they're not going to go do it because he doesn't have insurance to cover it.
Right. And so the other thing I worked with, and I can't remember the name of the marijuana group, but I convinced them to register every grow in the state on the Department of Ag Sensitive Crop Registry. So that will help applicators. They can go to that website and see where these houses are. But if it's an illegal house, they're probably not going to go sue you for loss anyway. But I guess the thing you got to worry about, if it's Chinese and, you know, it's the Chinese mafia, the triads, they may not send the lawyer to your house. They may send somebody else.
Yeah, exactly. And it's very true. Yeah, because, you know, that's what I was thinking about, you know, if a part of this deal you just discussed, that if you send a person from the Department of Oklahoma Department of Agriculture out there, maybe he doesn't want to go in there. So,
well, now, I did run legislation last year with Josh West of the House that they had to, if you had a medical marijuana business, you had to sign a attestation of where your financing came from. And if you did not, you lost your license.
Oh, I didn't know that. Great. And that's it. That's in law?
Yep.
Cool.
Yep, that is in law.
Great. Good job.
And then also in that bill is if you do not have an active license, you have 180 days to make it active. And what an active license is you're actually in the process of building a business, growing something. Because what these illegals are doing is they'll go get 100 licenses, and as soon as they start getting investigated, they move off and start another one on another license. So if they're just stockpiling license so they can just jump from license to license to license, if there's a license not being used, it goes away. It's voided.
Well, I just got a text in on the KCO Ag text line saying that, you know, marijuana is a whole lot cheaper than it was because the Chinese have flooded the market with it. A plant was $3,000. Now it's $300. So the liability insurance ought to be cheaper. that was well, tacky, but anyway.
that is true. And visiting with that guy that's in the business, he says you're going to see a lot of businesses go out of business this winter because they've, you know, supply and demand, they've oversupplied. But Oklahoma is grows more marijuana than any other state in the union. And in that statute that passed, in that ballot initiative that passed, it can only be used in Oklahoma. You cannot ship it out of state. And that's where they're catching a lot of these. They're shipping it out of state on the black market.
Yep.
And they've crashed the market because well, one thing Oklahomans can do, and these are the guys that's out there doing it right. Our farmers are very good at growing things. And, you know, the ones that are doing it right, that's in there trying to grow it, we're good at that.
Right.
And we can produce about anything here in the state of Oklahoma. And, you know, we're growing a lot of marijuana now.
Yep.
And we flooded the market, and it's not worth near what it used to be.
Yes, sir. And they, it's crazy how that just, I mean, it was going to be a successful business for a lot of people from Oklahoma, and they had it going, and then all of a sudden, a lot of these grow houses just start popping up everywhere, because if you think about it, we grow the most marijuana of any state in the United States. There can't be that many people in Oklahoma that has marijuana medical cards.
No, I ran that deal, right, and it's changed. I mean, but February the 1st of 21, we had 54 medical marijuana cards for every dispensary.
Wow.
In the state.
And that was in February.
That was in February.
Well, Senator Murdoch, you don't know how much I loved having you on today, and hopefully here maybe after the first of the year you can come back on and update us on some stuff and we can talk some more and talk about what you got going on personally with your cattle business and how things are looking. And one thing, you know what Saturday is? This coming Saturday?
No, what is it?
It's opening day of quail season. I'm ready to go.
All right.
Are you going to go?
I will probably be moving cows.
I'll probably be moving cows. Well, it's my favorite day besides Veterans Day and my wife's birthday. I better cover myself there. Opening day of quail season is my favorite day of the year.
It's fun. I went last year. It was fun.
All right. Well, you have a safe trip. And good luck with your cattle tomorrow. And again, thank you, sir, for being on the show today.
Yep, thank you.
All right, see you later.
All right, bye.
Bye. That was Senator Casey Murdoch of District 27, which includes some of our listening area, or actually quite a bit of the northern part of our listening area, and they've redistricted, and now he's Roger Mills is in there for sure. So anyway, that was a good talk with him. I hope you guys enjoyed some of the topics I brought up with him. It's Today in Ag with Jimmy Clark, and we'll be right back with the Long Ranger Forecast.
Are you in the market to buy or sell cattle? Then don't miss Hobart Stockyard's weekly cattle sale in Hobart, Oklahoma. The sale's every Wednesday at 9:30 a.m. Buyers can bid in person or online. To consign, call Rex Fleming at 580-331-8547. That's 580-331-8547. Be sure and check out the market reports and each week's penny news. Hobart Stockyards, where we want your business and do appreciate it.
Are there any beef eaters out there? Well, sink your teeth into this. The Elk City Rotary Club's giving you a chance to win a side of beef and a freezer to keep it in with the Beef Sweepstakes. Get one ticket for $25 or five tickets for just $100. Go by First National Bank and Trust of Elk City to get your tickets. Grand prize is a side of beef and a freezer. Second and third prizes are a quarter beef each. Winners chosen December 11th at 8 p.m. at Elk City's Christmas in the Park in Ackley Park. Beef up your Christmas and help some great local projects with the Elk City Rotary Club's Beef Sweepstakes.
Beef, it's what's for dinner.
This hour's weather is brought to you by Hobart Farm and Garden.
Complete nutrition for every animal. That's what you'll find at High Pro Feeds. At High Pro, their commitment to nutrition is unwavering. Buy the best and get the most out of every animal. Hobart Farm and Garden in Hobart, Oklahoma is your local High Pro Feeds dealer, providing quality feeds in bulk, bags, and sacks. Check them out on Facebook and online at HobartFarmAndGarden.com.
Oh, Jimmy's all wound up and ready to go. Here comes more of Today in Ag with Jimmy Clark on 96.5 KECO.
Now, that's why I love farmers and ranchers. I get a text message from a friend of mine down in the breaks down there west of Willow, and he sends me a picture. We got one of those two-ball waters down there that looked like it was leaking water. And he said, you might have a hell of a water bill. I think I got it adjusted. He just didn't call me to tell me it was leaking. He actually went out there and tried to fix it. So that's a good neighbor for you. So anyway, that's why I love farmers and ranchers. They're not bashful. They'll jump over the fence and fix anything you got. The forecast is currently at 63 degrees with wind out of the north-northwest at 9 miles an hour, 14-mile-an-hour gust. Today, a high 63, and we're already there, so we might get a little warmer, not sure. Friday, breezy, winds out of the northwest at 13 to 23 with gusts up to 30. A high tomorrow, 60 degrees. Tomorrow night, it's going to get a little chilly. Low of 32 degrees, and northwest winds 2 to 9 miles an hour. Saturday, mostly sunny, 66 degrees with light winds. Sunday, 66. Monday, 69. So after tomorrow night, the weather's not going to be too bad, but we are going to be breezy tomorrow. So skirt alert. Anyway, I got time to do this. Oklahoma cash prices, grain prices, hard red winter wheat was $7.91 a bushel. It's up. It's all clicking on that $8 mark. Milo's at $5.68. Corn's at $5.65. They both are creeping up. Soybeans are holding their own at $11.57 a bushel. Cotton, when I looked at it about 10:30, was $1.19 per pound. So prices are looking good, but now we need to do something about our cost. Soybeans were modestly higher overnight on some signs of demand, while wheat futures backed off from yesterday's surge. Exporters yesterday reported sales of 22,000 metric tons of soybean oil to an unnamed country, according to the USDA. On Tuesday, exporters reported sales of 150,000 metric tons of corn to Colombia. Last week, said Egypt bought 100,000 metric tons of soybeans from the United States, according to the USDA. Also underpinning soybean prices is the USDA's World Agriculture Supply and Demand Estimates report, in which the government lowered its outlook for soybean production in the 21-22 marketing year that started on September 1st. Output is now forecast at 4.425 billion bushels, the agency said in its report on Tuesday. That's down from its October outlook of 4.48 billion bushels. Yield is now pegged at 51.2 bushels per acre, down from the 51.5 bushels an acre. They had that misread. The USDA stockpiles of estimate for soybeans, meanwhile, was raised at 340 million bushels from 320. U.S. exports are now seen at 2.05 billion bushels from 2.09 billion bushels. Wheat futures were lower in overnight trading amid some profit-taking after prices surged almost a quarter in Chicago. Yeah, it jumped up there about 24 cents pretty quick yesterday. Global ending stockpiles of the grain at the end of the marketing year on May 31st are now forecast by the USDA at 275.8 million metric tons, down from the previous outlook of 277.2. That's also down from 280 million tons a year earlier, according to their data. Prices jumped 24.5 cents, which may have led some speculative investors who were long the market or had to bet on higher prices to sell contracts and liquidate their positions. Soybean futures for November delivery, 2 cents, up 2 cents to 12.18 a bushel overnight on the Chicago Board of Trade. Soy meal gained 1 cent to 343.50 a short ton, while soy oil rose 0.41 cents to 58.73 cents a pound. So there you have it. You guys remember this Saturday, the 4th Annual Convention and Trade Show for the Oklahoma Independent Stock Growers Association over at Frisco Center in Clinton. Call Joshua at 580-302-3039 to make reservations. Lots of people going on there, and I'll bring it up again tomorrow. You guys have a great day, and God bless. And remember, when you see a veteran, tell him you love him and thank him for his service. God bless.
You've got it locked on Western Oklahoma and the Eastern Texas Panhandle's home for today's best country. Number one rated, 96.5 KECO Elk City.
This day is your day. Lisa Brady, Fox News. That message from the VA Secretary to America's veterans, among the top officials joining the Commander-in-Chief in paying tribute.
To be a veteran is to endure and survive challenges most Americans will never know. You've come through the trials and testing.